Testing.
If you take it out, if it, we send it over to Butte Purge, it's going to be just another one of those miscellaneous offices and get lost. But it'll have more visibility, and I think you could guide this thing. And I said, sure. One thing I have to say is that Bud Zumwalt did not know the severity of the racial situation until he, on his own, which is the way he was proceeding, setting up these confrontational groups, come in for a week, until found out just these guys were not very happy. Their wives were not very happy. And for the blacks, he did that twice. Well, he teared them. First time was junior officers, and then enlisted with their wives. Then about a year later, he did it again, and found out that not much was happening. And Chafee was in on this. Chafee was astounded to learn what these kids had to put up with. I always had a feeling on this, even when I was in the secretary's office. Lester Bell, who was the head of, who was the military writer for San Diego office. Copley News. I knew him from when I was back there at First Fleet. We were good friends. We did a lot of socializing together and so forth. He's sitting around my office one day and said, don't you have something for me to work on? Let me throw this at you. The Navy's going to be in a hell of a predicament someday. I don't know when it's going to happen. But it's going to follow, or it's going to lead what's happening in the civilian side. And went into this. He jumped on it. And about a week later, he came back and he said, I've been fired. You're one of the best guys we have in the Pentagon Press Corps. So, well, I'm being transferred. I'm going to go over to the Hill, but I think I've been fired. And it's because of that damn article you got me onto. Because they're all Navy back there at the Copy News, and they said, oh, shit, that won't happen. But couldn't happen. Never would have happened. Bud always knew that we knew that we had a problem, but he didn't know the depths and how it gets down to not having much dignity to serving in the Navy if you're black. And of course, the Filipinos are the same. Not as severe as black.
Would you also care, would you throw in there women going to sea as another issue?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he's just opening it up for, he was ahead of what the Navy wanted to accept as the norm, but it was becoming the norm in the civilian world.
And so in the position that you were in, you were sort of, I would imagine, as a public affairs officer, you were on the front line, for example, when Admiral Anderson and others were, I mean, these were people who didn't like Zumwalt and wanted to get him, I mean, they wanted to see him relieved, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And were trying days for you, tough days, or?
Yeah, well, I didn't get into, not much I could do except just console bug, just hold it. He knew a heck of a lot more about that end of it than I did. But I knew about Anderson.
Were you involved with the Hicks hearings at all? Did you go down with them or in front of them?
Well, I testified and I got the hell kicked out of me.
You did? See, I haven't looked at the testimony yet, so I didn't know you testified. All right. That's good for you to know. All right.
Yeah. It's, I went over there and I got my got my way into it with Bud's approval that just before he left, Tom Moore signed a piece of paper to all commanders. It's about haircut styles. And the last sentence was, this should not be promulgated, but it's for your information. And this, you know, this is something for, like a Z-gram, but don't tell anybody about it. And I got a hold of that. What the hell? Really? I've been an admirer of Tom Moore in a lot of ways. Because he moved pretty well in the strata he was in. But you know, the last couple of years, I realized that this guy has no legacy. He hasn't left anything behind. It's like most people, they serve their tour, and then they're gone. And who are they? Oh yeah, I remember him. He was around sometime. And I was very close to Tom Moore. I spent a lot of time over at the house talking when I was building the memorial. There's something wrong with this guy. We used to go looking for money. I'd bring him along as the window dressing, you know, the guy, all the influence and so forth. Then I realized that he was talking to these people too, even in front of me, about making a contribution to the Naval Aviation Museum down in Florida, in Pensacola. In fact, I said to him one day, hey, you gotta when you're with me anyway, you should have a little deference to who you're raising money for. But he well, there's an animosity built in, the unionism of the Navy.
Yeah.
And another thing, was very obvious, that they were so jealous of him. He was getting, well, cover of time and so forth. Best thing that's ever happened to the Navy and all that kind of stuff. So if the aviators led the the anti-Zumwalt campaign, which is still going on. You know?
It's still going on.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Once in a while, I think the younger people always thought, hey, boy, this is great. Enlisted men or the younger enlisted men, the old chiefs didn't like it. There was a movement a couple of years ago, not to name a ship, but
right.
You got into that.
I'm all familiar with it. I haven't started writing about it yet. Yeah, no, but I am familiar with it. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jerry Miller was the leader of it. I haven't heard of Jerry for a couple of years. Probably He's older than I am, so he must be in ill health.
Where would Admiral Holloway have been on that?
Well, Holloway is in a particular, peculiar situation. All the time he was a CNO, or the VCNO, and then the CNO, he would answer questions like that. Well, you know, I was a part of making those decisions, so. But he is an anti-Zumwalt guy right now, which surprised me. I had tried to have lunch with him, talk to him, but it hasn't worked.
Yeah, I'm supposed to interview him shortly, he's made a lot of speeches and written many things in the last couple of years that have been particularly critical of Zumwalt. I've sent him, Jim Zumwalt had not seen some of them. I sent it to him, and he was particularly shocked to see some of the things that Holloway has been saying recently. So. But, you know, that's what happens when, but again, that's an interesting issue, too, because, of course, he followed Zumwalt right away, too. I do cover Holloway's, because he came in right after Zumwalt in 74, so I cover that period in the book as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's been very, he's still around and talking. I have not spoken to him yet. I've spoken to enough anti-Zumwalt people already. They're not hard to find, you know. But the funniest Zumwalt story, I was interviewing an admiral, and he says to me, I'll tell you what I really thought of him right now, just so we can get started. Okay? And I said, yes, sir. And he said, I was in the Phoenix Airport. I think it was Phoenix Airport. I hadn't seen Zumwalt he said, but I hadn't seen Bud in 15 years. I'm walking one way and he's walking another way. He comes over and he says hello. And, you know, I come over and say hello, and it's very cordial. He said, but for one minute, he said, I really did think about just hauling off and telling him what I really thought finally, but I couldn't do it. So that sums it up. But, you know, I mean, again, you know, I think the key is the fact that he left this extraordinary legacy, and he rocked the boat and changed things. And when you're an agent of change, that's what happens, you know.
Navy is so much better off.
Well, you know, in my
book. A lot
book,
of people say that
in
because
my book,
of Zumwalt.
Yeah. In my book, I make a controversial statement that is that I actually side with the people who have told me, and several people have had. It's not that he changed the Navy, he saved the Navy in the 60s. It's a very interesting sort of perspective, in the 70s, very sort of interesting perspective to get to think what the implications of that are, you know, on that. I mean, because I look at things like the reenlistment rates and all of these things improved dramatically and like now, it was as this. I think you would agree that Zumwalt had a very productive and good working relationship with John Chafee, but it would change under John Warner. It would be different, right? Do you have anything to say about just the your observations of Warner compared to Chafee as Secretary of Navy in their relationship with Zumwalt, or how they reacted?
Warner really didn't know what was going on. You know, he was my boss. I worked for him, and I was an advisor to the CNO as the CINFO. And I maintained I was still a naval officer, and I was loyal to my boss. So I was in a difficult situation. He was looking for something. Mel Laird didn't think he'd think much of it. And Warner was aware of that. Bud got along with Laird quite well. I got a phone call. Must have been 8-9 months ago. From Laird. I didn't know who the hell it was at first. I used to see that he's from Wisconsin. And
his book is out.
We'd go back and see Packer games together.
Okay.
But he always took credit for Bud being CNO. He knew what Abrams thought of him. Yeah, I'm sure that's... And Chafee was a great advocate of what Bud was trying to do. What these guys don't realize, but it's in print, I know, it's in Bud's book, that most of these big decisions, the Z-grams, were very well staffed by the fleet commanders and everybody else, and they agreeing with them. Of course, Bud is a very good debater, good arguer. Anyway.
Now, his two closest aides who came from Vietnam to Washington, one was Chick Roush, right?
And the other
Well, I'm scheduled to interview via phone, because I think he lives up in
Maine.
Yeah. And Emmett Tidd, who I've known for years, and I've spoken to him 100 times. And, Emmett? Yeah,
and
Emmett.
Second son just made flag rank. He's the chaplain.
Yeah, the chaplain did. Okay, I didn't know that. I'm so happy. That's really good.
Yeah, just came out yesterday.
Oh. Well, I'll send him a little note. As a matter of fact, I hear Muggs is not doing all that.
Who?
His wife, Muggs.
Right. Yeah, they moved over to Minneapolis.
Yeah, so there we are together. We would always this is at Wilson Boulevard, where I have to go later today, but this is our favorite place. We always used to go to eat lunch and everything together. I have to mail this picture to him, as a matter of fact. No, Emmett's been a great source of, he's a real big defender. You can't say anything negative. But he was the first person to tell me where the bodies were, you know, and he gave me the list of people to speak to who were supporters, and the list of people who would be critical. And the list turned out to be, quite accurate. And on that, he sent me to, he tried to give me some good leads. But one of the things Emmett told me, which would be, and I think it goes right to, which is that the thing about Zumwalt was when he had people like Rao, he had Tidd, he had you, Robertson, and I'm going to interview Bobby Hazard. I haven't interviewed her yet, but
she's a very good friend. Yeah. She lives about a mile away.
Yes, yeah, what I heard. Yeah, but I heard she's not doing that well. Is that
she's right? Not. She's spacey as hell.
Oh gosh. Okay, I didn't.
Well, you better hurry.
Okay, I didn't know that. Yeah, well, I will hurry. And did you know Jerry Wages?
Yeah.
You know Captain Jerry. He died. But,
yeah, I did.
You did. Yeah. So. He was a great help to me, and before he died, he contacted me and he told me he didn't have much time. He had all these papers, he wanted me to go through them. He was writing a book on Zumwalt that he couldn't finish, and he wanted me to have all the access to all the material, and it's been very helpful to me as I've gone through all this. It's very insightful, but it's clear that what he really did was he put together this, incredibly loyal team. And it looked like once people were brought in, they became very loyal to him. Do I have that right?
There was a misconception. Remember talking about that yesterday. We had a meeting of retired PAOs about the head in the kitchen cabinet, what he called his mini staff.
That's right, he used that word, mini staff.
But the mini staff thing didn't come out until after he retired. Because I was there when we invented it. We were having a party, a reunion down there at Pinehurst.
I've got your invitation to that.
Is that right?
You wrote this great, yeah, you finished that, but I'll give it to you. I brought it with me. Yeah, this is great. This is something you wrote on February 19th, 1990. That's one of the funniest, it's very good. Very insightful. Bud's gonna barbecue. And,
yeah.
You remember that?
Well, I don't remember this. No. But, yeah.
So this is what you say. This is a 20th reunion. So I love this. Think hard. Where were you 20 years ago on the eve of the nomination of a 48-year-old vice admiral with the odd name, crew cut, and bushy eyebrows to be the chief of naval operation? That April anniversary is approaching. Think about it. The name Elmo R. Zumwalt Jr. dropped on Washington and the Navy with the impact that sent shockwaves through hallowed halls, caucus rooms, ward rooms, CPO clubs, and the Burning Tree golf course. What was the decibel count that decreased only a skosh but took off again in a roar on July 1970 that remained constant through the excruciations of Project 80 and ignited the boost phase rockets into the real blast? Only the cancellation of all Z-grams at the end of 1994 allowed us to remove our earplugs. That was good.
Well,
on that. So you invented this term mini-staff at one of these?
No, it wasn't.
At Pinehurst.
It came out of the conversation, and we called it the mini-staff. And that grew. People started using that mini staff. That was just kitchen cabinet. Well, the mini staff was just these guys that went to the reunion. His staff, his immediate staff.
Now, okay, I understand. Now, one of the things you said in this in the chapter I read, and I had read it somewhere else too, was this remark where you said, "Hey, Captain, I can't wait." 5 years, and Zumwalt responded, "Well, I'll be CNO in 5 years," something like that. Yeah.
Oh, that story. Yeah.
That story. Yeah. Now, do you think that obviously it's said in jest, but do you think Zumwalt really believed he would be? That Bud believed he would be.
No, I was thinking about that recently too, because the event really happened. Robbie doesn't even remember it anymore. He was going to be the JAG, you know. Very simply, he knew that Moore was going to be moving into the Joint Staff, Joint Chiefs of Staff, and that so. CNO job would be opening up in such and such a time frame, in just 5 years. Yeah. Robbie and I were both shocked. You know, when he said, "You're going to be the JAG, and you're going to be the JNO."
It's a great story.
Whether he would have hung around if he didn't make it by that time. But, he was so... His mind never stopped, and he's thinking of things all the time.
So this room, you mentioned Admiral Moore and the Joint Chiefs. What is your take on this thing that was called the Admiral Spy Ring? That is, we know obviously that there's a lot of documentation now that Moore did have Radford in Kissinger's office, and for this long period of time, this information was coming back. There's also information that Admiral Zumwalt had his own spies, as he liked to used to have to say, he had his own network. You have any insights?
I think it's a network. That's what we call them nowadays. I never thought it was as sinister as it turned out to be. But that kind of stuff went on.
Why do you think that, have you ever thought about why Nixon, there was I've listened to these tapes, there are two tapes, there's a tape where Nixon, they discuss firing Moore after this, but Nixon decides he's not going to fire Moore, he's going to keep him around, he because they'll have something on board and it'll create loyalty. That's what makes it things. What do you, does that make sense to you? Or that is, you know, you have this sort of
well,
great public furor and outcry.
That's a study in itself, just what's going on in Nixon's mind. Heard something yesterday. Oh, who's the fellow from University of Wisconsin? The writer, the historian?
Cutler. Stanley Cutler. Or Suri?
No.
Jeremy Suri? Well, I don't know. Or Stanley Cutler, too.
No. Okay. Then he went down to New Orleans. He wrote the book on the Eisenhower. He grew up by Eisenhower's.
Ambrose?
Ambrose, yeah. In fact, I'm listening to a tape of his, To America.
Yeah, I've read that book.
Describing, he wrote a book on Nixon. He spent a lot of time with Nixon. No, he didn't spend time with Nixon. He never talked to him, I guess.
It was written, he wrote extensively.
Yeah. But, I don't know. I wouldn't have trusted Secretary of State doing anything.
You mean Kissinger?
Kissinger, yeah. And, I think Kissinger used Nixon and his frailties to his advantage.
And as you know, I'm in some way considered Kissinger to be one of the most devious and dishonest people. He's written about it, spoke about it. And then, of course, after that, both he and Nitzer, when they formed their committee and they really started.
Present Danger?
Present Danger, they really thought he was, very dangerous person.
Yeah.
So now, after one of the things I did learn about you was that after in 1976, did you play some sort of role in Zumwalt's unsuccessful run for the United States Senate in Virginia?
Supposedly ran his Northern Virginia office. I stopped doing what I was doing and went to work for him.
What kind of candidate was he?
Well, he wasn't a politician. One thing we had to work on with him was that you don't have to tell everything you know. Somebody asks you a question. Mel Laird was so good at that. He would go to a press conference and half an hour later, press corps would be walking out of there and, what did he say? But he talked all the time. But I think Bud improved. He would have been a hell of a senator. But the road to get that way, treacherous. I always felt sorry for him. He's opening himself up to a lot of grief. But someone could have handled anything. One thing he was not is a paranoid, I don't think. He didn't worry about criticism. He knew it was going to be there.
Well, one thing I learned about that going through the Mitzi papers was that, the donation lists are there, who gave money, whatever, but the reason that comes out is that all the other retired admirals who hated him gave money to Byrd and opposed him.
Okay.
So the amount of anti-Zumwalt money that went in was from the Navy was greater than the amount of Navy money that went in to support him, which I found to be particularly interesting on that. So after he's defeated, I know he opens up, you know, some Morton Associates. He goes to, he relocates, becomes the chairman of the board. I think he goes to, does he go to Green Bay? Then he goes to,
Green Bay.
And, he's living this sort of life of a corporate admiral, on the boards, doing all this stuff. Then news comes, of course, that Elmo has got cancer. And he devotes really, literally, the rest of his life to finding out, two things.
It's a great effort, which hasn't been recognized, really.
Right, yeah. Well, it's been recognized in my book. It is recognized in two ways. One is, of course, Clinton recognized it when he gave him the presidential, awarded him the presidential medal of freedom, which was a beautiful moment that I've watched on tape several times. Great words there. But I have a voluminous amount of material on Zum Walt's. He threw everything he had into the lawsuit, the deposition, the affidavits, and he reached this conclusion he had been misled by the chemical companies, certainly, and maybe his government, but he didn't know what the government really knew or didn't know, but clearly they hid from the people who had to make these decisions